another session of the Bitcoin Jam. Thanks for making it, guys. I know I was the hard one this week because I have some travel plans on Friday. So here we are getting together on Wednesday instead. And I haven't cleared this. I don't know if Steve is down for this, but feels like this quantum computing thing is still like every day there's like new news and people talking about stuff. And I feel like the session we did last Friday on it was really good. And people have given a lot of good feedback on that. And the thing that's happened since then is I think you organized the Spiral Wizards group to talk about this, or maybe they were otherwise talking about this. So I was going to share a few of the things that you tweeted, and then just kind of wanted to overall maybe hear more about the process. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what Spiral Wizards is and sort of how it came to be, and if this quantum computing thing is itself a major topic of discussion or just sort of bubbled up recently related to some of the news. So the two main takeaways I had, and you know, there's a lot in the tweet, but the two main takeaways were things that Matt Corallo had written, and I'd say it's quantum compute that can break elliptic curve cryptography will take a while, probably closer to a decade or two than a few years. This lines up with NSA and other recommendations. We have time to upgrade, but we might consider having an option today for wallets to get quantum compute security later. That's one point. And the second point is we'll get some reasonable warning before QCs are here. QC development requires immense resources, so much so that only a few organizations in the world can afford to hire the talent required and fund the lab. This type of development has and will likely continue to lead to announcements as progress continues, and we'll have a few years warning as QCs get closer and closer. So those are the two points. I kind of take it to mean like, let's pay attention, but let's not get all stressed out and fret about everything, which I think is kind of where we landed last Friday, but just wanted to hear kind of more the process of kind of how this thing went down, or if there's any other core insights that you want to highlight.
Let me start by just commenting on what you said, and then I can talk about process or lack thereof process. I think what we know is that changing protocols, changing consensus, updating wallets takes a long time, at least for non-emergencies. It's like a 4 to 8 year time, you know, lifespan to go from like concept to broad adoption of something like that. So to, you know, I think the concept that we're proposing here, and I should qualify that that was a kind of a rough developer mailing list post that is really intended to be a conversation starter. It's not like a draft spec or anything. I think it's a good quality post to start a conversation. But yeah, I mean, the idea here is that like, okay, even if it's 20, 30 years away or more, are there some basic things we can do over the next few years to prepare us for that so it's less of an emergency rough if and when we need to do that? That it's like better thought out and a cleaner process to deal with an emergency. Also, we don't know if or when that emergency will ever come. I mean, some people are posting to the dev list saying 2020 is up to 3 year. Most credible Bitcoin developers, not necessarily quantum computing experts, but Bitcoin developers think it's decades away. Maybe it's never, who knows, but laying the groundwork ahead of time seems like a good idea, especially if it's a relatively low lift. So that's part of that post. And also there's a last consensus change to Bitcoin was called Taproot. One of the things it affords, it actually creates a structure that allows for this type of change to occur. We talked about it a little bit last time in the pod. We don't have to go into the details now either. It takes advantage of that. And it also has a nice property. Like it could enable relatively inefficient quantum resistant cryptography today. And then that can be upgraded over time as well. When it becomes clear that it's imminent that a quantum computer is going to break Bitcoin, and let's say we have like a 2 or 3 year window, we'll then choose the most efficient, best cryptography then, but we're also prepared with this less efficient one in case it comes out of the blue and with no heads up. So that's this conversation starter. Yeah, as far as the process to put this together, I lead a group called Spiral. We're an initiative within Block, but we're non-commercial. We just focus on improving Bitcoin, focus on open source and protocol development, developer kits, things like that. And within our team, we have a group called the Spiral Wizards, which, you know, we have three developers that are like very experienced with Bitcoin development. And at least I would give them the wizards tag. There's many others throughout Bitcoin. Not many, but I mean, like, there's, you know, Spiral doesn't have a monopoly on wizards. There's other wizard developers in Bitcoin, just deep thinkers who know it really well and have foresight in the future. So, you know, this year, we formed this a year ago. This year, one thing we've done is created a weekly study club, which we take a new technology, new proposal, whether it be a covenants proposal or some scaling proposal or a privacy proposal or some academic paper, and spend a week. At least two of the three wizards like need to prep and study it and really understand it. So others who on our team who join that weekly study club can ask dumb questions, and we at least have better answers than just ignorant answers. So we have some understanding of these proposals, and it's really leveled up our knowledge, a lot of these proposals, and helped form perspectives. We've done a little bit of weighing. I mean, the goal of this is not just to like make a few of us more knowledgeable about this stuff, but we really want to impact the overall space and help guide some discussions and advance our collective knowledge.
Are there certain topics that are like kind of the active, you know, debates or discussions besides this quantum compute thing, like just other topics people may be aware of or that we may have heard of?
I mean, quantum is just not even like really on the radar.
Right, yeah.
I mean, this the process for getting this out was like, I started asking dumb questions, you know, because we were asking dumb questions.
Yeah.
And then people smarter than me started thinking about it, and that led to, you know, that first draft proposal. So, which I like, though. It's like nice and fast, and like hopefully will encourage a conversation among other smart people, and like, you know, over the ensuing months and years, we can advance that, maybe actually turn it into action. So I like that. And in fact, that's something that I want to see more of from our wizards team, so that it's not just like three people getting smarter about stuff, but actually influencing others. And so you asked like, what are their areas? Certainly we're very interested in scaling Bitcoin, improving security, improving privacy of Bitcoin, improving decentralization, and thinking about user experience across all those. Like when we advance those, like can application developers create a good user experience? So those are the pillars we at Spiral look at. So when we look at technologies, we're like, you know, which of those or which subset of those does it improve? So we've looked at a lot of scaling proposals this year, Superscalar, R, timeout trees, zero knowledge proof, sidechains, et cetera. And there's at least 9 different covenant proposals. So we've looked at all of those as well. And there's a lot of contention right now around covenants in the space. My own view or just assessment of that, I think there's pretty broad appeal among developers that we kind of want covenants in some form, but there are several competing ones, and like it's impossible so far to like get developers who are thinking about this, looking at it, to just really gain consensus on one of them, because they each have trade-offs. There's not like just one obviously better than the others. They each have trade-offs. There's contention around like, is the benefit of them actually urgent? Is it really that big a benefit? There are some concerns about attack vectors that they might open up. So what kind of downside risk is there? So we've looked at that. But yeah, anyway, moving forward into 2025, we hope to do an even better job at engaging more broadly. And
do you guys publish anything like
combination of like
what happened?
Sorry.
I was asking, do you guys ever like publish notes of what happened in each session, or kind of what are the certain topics that are active? Because it feels like the kind of thing where there's this small group that's learning a lot, but maybe not necessarily getting it out to the broader people who might have an interest or passing interest or want to weigh in.
Yeah. We have like a draft blog post, and I think we'll do more publication like that. I think just publishing notes, I don't know. Maybe that moves. I mean, it also, the downside risk of that is because these are like both complex and there's so much drama on Twitter, like posting in a less polished or well thought out way can like create unnecessary drama. So maybe we'll stick with like more well thought out posts, but in podcasts and speaking at conference events, etc. So we'd like to do.
I assume podcast, or go ahead.
Yeah, well, a couple of thoughts. I do think some kind of notes would be very interesting for the community, even if it is, you know, somewhat half-baked and there's a lot of drama around that. But I would, like, for example, love to see, like, what the Wizards are saying about all the covenants. I don't really have a strong proposal there. One other thought on the quantum thing as it relates to Spiral, and I actually have some specific thoughts on quantum, but as it relates to Spiral, do you think it makes sense now that this is kind of on the roadmap to potentially look at grants for folks that are focused just on post-quantum cryptography and like, okay, now how can we bring, you know, some of that more directly to Bitcoin? Because I'm not sure who else would be like, if there's companies for whom it would make sense. It seems almost like a public good that doesn't really have someone other than a group like Spiral to focus on it yet.
My thoughts on that, in terms of like quantum resistant cryptography research, I don't think Spiral will fund that.
Or sorry, to clarify, not the research itself, but maybe bring some of those postdocs in to the Bitcoin community.
To get them thinking about applying it to Bitcoin?
Correct.
Well, I mean, just to finish my thought on why we wouldn't fund that research, not because we don't think it's important, right, but I think it'll take care of itself because it's broader than Bitcoin. I mean, it impacts like the world. I think I don't even know how much funding there is now. So I'm kind of like sticking my head in the sand. Don't even know, but I just assume there's a bunch of research there, both like interest and funding. And if there isn't, then like other people should be pushing that, not Spiral. That's my, but as far as like applying it to Bitcoin, yes, that would start to get into the purview of what, or scope would, of what I think Spiral should be funding.
Right.
And I mean, if the general research is done, I think existing Bitcoin developers that are on the cryptography, that they know cryptography fairly well, but they're not quantum computer experts, could read all that research and apply it to Bitcoin. I don't think we need to bring in quantum experts to become Bitcoin developers. I think Bitcoin developers can handle it, but we're always looking to grow the talent base of, I mean, wizards in Bitcoin and people who can apply, you know, people who are cryptography, applied cryptography expertise in Bitcoin.
Well, and the reason I ask that is, you know, I've been kind of surprised because I also have asked a lot of the smartest people that I know around Bitcoin. These are people that I admire very highly and like, you know, or several pay grades above my own understanding. And, you know, the consistent answer I got from almost every single one of them was basically like, well, probably don't need to worry, but caveat, I'm not an expert in quantum, post-quantum cryptography. I heard that literally from almost every single one. And so I know there are a few wizards that have thought deeply about this, but even they, I would assume, you know, that they've spent years thinking about what's the next set of, you know, post-quantum algorithms. Probably very few people in the world. The reason I ask that is I also assume that there's enough of that research being done, although I don't really know, right? Like we talked about companies like Signal, Apple, probably the federal government and intelligence agencies. Those are probably the people at the forefront. But to your point, I think the one thing that really, really needs to be done and some sort of public good type thing probably makes sense here is what happens in the emergency case scenario. I totally buy we're going to be very fine in the like 90% plus case where you have that 48-year window. But in the case where, oh shit, it happened yesterday, I think that having people that are already deep in that field, maybe they don't need to be the ones to actually write the code. Maybe they're working with the Bitcoin developers. But I would feel personally, as someone deep in this game, a lot better if I knew there was at least a few of those like postdocs or PhDs at Stanford or the University of Toronto or whatever who are deep in that world, working with, for example, the wizards to say, hey, together, this is the absolute state of the art that we could roll if it happened yesterday. And I feel like, and again, maybe a lot of companies should come together to fund this as well, because I feel like this is a public good, but I would feel a lot better if I knew that somehow someone was building that bridge and I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I would say it's on the radar of Spiral to look for that. I honestly still don't know if it actually meets the priority bar though.
Yeah.
I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying there's a lot of stuff to improve in Bitcoin and like
for sure
meet the bar. It's in contention to being a priority, but you know, there's lots of other important security and other aspects of Bitcoin that I think are probably more near-term priorities, but well, let's see. I'll certainly report it here.
Yeah. And to be clear, I'm not trying to put this all on Spiral either. I mean, Spiral is obviously a great actor. There are a lot of great philanthropists and whatnot in Bitcoin, but given the sort of amount of, you know, sort of low probability but high impact this could cause and the lack of like that bridge that I've seen yet, it seems like even a few people full-time thinking on this, like that are from that postdoc type world, probably worth the investment for some either company or some group that has a big interest in Bitcoin. The other thing that I wanted to add on quantum, though.
Let's get Sailor on there.
I mean, actually, right? whoever holds a lot of BTC probably worth spending $100,000 to get one of these postdocs involved. One thing that I did update my thinking on a little bit since last time on quantum, and Steve, you said something that actually stuck with me, like let it marinate in my mind a bit, was we talked about, okay, let's say the absolute worst case attack happened and we say, all right, yesterday, public key encryption is broken. Now what? And originally, you know, I mentioned the tweet, or I guess at that time would have been Bitcoin Talk post forum post from Satoshi saying, hey, if this ever happens, we'll probably be able to reach a consensus on when it was broken and just hard fork the chain. And you made the point, you're like, yeah, maybe, but like we saw the DAO hack and like, you know, the whole value of Bitcoin is its neutrality, immutability, and like, you know, Ethereum's lost credibility for many reasons, but the DAO fork was obviously a major one. And so the more I kind of thought on this, you know, I do think it's great that people prepare for post-quantum cryptography, but, you know, I'm increasingly kind of the view that like the keys that are out there and exposed, like that's the bounty. And if we don't get it fixed in time, that's the free market's way of saying, you know, the bounty on solving quantum computing is a lot bigger than we thought. And that's nature doing its thing. So I would say that's kind of one area I've updated my view on, is if that happens. You know, I never say never. These are very complicated questions. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have thoughts if and when it happens, but like, I think it's more of just, that's the bounty nature's putting on quantum.
Yeah. I'm certainly open to that viewpoint. I mean, I see the merit of that viewpoint, and I might be there myself. And I know of one other person too who's thought a lot about this and sort of went on the journey that maybe you did, Max, and has arrived at like, it just, whoever
it is, what it is.
And like, it's a redistribution and it is a bounty, you know. So he gets into this like philosophical question of what's fair. But, you know, obviously you can say it's not fair that like some person or group gets all this Bitcoin unfairly. You know, if you break a principle too, that's unfair to every involved in. So, like, I mean, so fairness is always an interesting concept, and that you can usually look at a situation, multiple angles, and define fairness different ways. And I think this is one of them.
Fairness is just even talking
about, I mean, in conversations about distribution of Bitcoin as it's happened, a common criticism of Bitcoin is it's unfair. Like the early people, it's unfair that they got more Bitcoin, or it was easier to mine, or this or that or whatever. But I mean, I still feel strongly that it's incredibly fair. Again, you can look at it through a certain lens and call it unfair, but if you look at the totality of how one would go about this, I think Bitcoin is easily the most fair system ever for money. And I don't know, I have not heard of or can't think of a way that's more fair.
Yep.
Yep.
This does make me, if you can sort of, you know, suspend disbelief for a moment, but this does make me think that, you know, I think the bar for what it would take to build something better than Bitcoin is so extraordinarily high that I kind of go around thinking like, okay, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, if I see it, I should recognize it because it should be very different. You know, not just like, oh, we're doing a blockchain, but throwing on some quantum resistance. So better Bitcoin, right? So I think the bar is like insanely high at this point because Bitcoin is so good at like getting the fundamentals right. But is there a chance that like the way, you know, cryptography and quantum and sort of like the properties of the universe and energy flow, that like, would you be open to seeing a new structure that those ingredients create to sort of build something that solves the problems that Bitcoin aims to solve, but better?
I don't know. I mean, I think we have to be open to it, but like, it's really hard. It's difficult to see how the unique nature of how Bitcoin came about being repeated for many reasons, but you need the ingredient of like a person or group who is so selfless to just like disappear, walk away, not assert their power, and at least to date, not assert any kind of economic power that they might have. That's super rare. Could be repeated, certainly, but rare. It's also hard to like, you know, I was just talking to someone, I think earlier today, about how impressive Satoshi has been with their OPSEC. Like,
yeah, it's crazy, actually.
Like, name another instance of someone who's like hidden themselves since then. Like, there's lots of people that have been doxxed that didn't want to be outed.
Mm-hmm.
since then. So it's really the how they hasn't been doxxed. Can that be repeated? I mean, again, yes, it is certainly possible, but I think even harder now to do that. And then given what the world knows now about cryptocurrency and what's possible and like how real it can be and how like economically beneficial it can be to individuals or whatever, it also makes it really hard to repeat that experiment. Because when Bitcoin took off, there was no economic value to any cryptocurrency. And the first couple of years, like Bitcoin was worth nothing. And then it flipped from zero to a penny. And like that event is a pivotal event. And it's no longer like an interesting event because it happens every day with new tokens that are created. So it's hard for me to see how it could be redone. But I think it would require one of these like out of left field events, like quantum computing destroys Bitcoin. And then we have no system that works maybe. And we got to start over. Well, okay. But
yeah, I agree with all that. You never say never, right? Because the universe is as weird place for the mini universes and you never know. But it seems pretty unlikely to me. I mean, I think one way that, you know, I've mentioned this many times, but the lens through which I see Bitcoin is it is energy backed money. And so increasingly the way I think of Bitcoin is either a kilowatt hour coin or a GDP coin. What I mean by that is it's a ledger of all of the calories, joules, or kilowatt hours that mankind has harnessed today. And I think that there's a couple of really interesting things around that. There's many interesting things. One, you know, this has been seen for centuries by great thinkers like Buckminster Fuller, Tesla, Edison, Ford, et cetera. So it's not a surprise. In fact, it's like exactly what they were predicting. But I think it has, you know, many interesting second order implications. One is that obviously it is forcing us to build more ways to capture energy and increase the overall GDP and sort of like power that humankind harnesses. So I think in that sense, Bitcoin is this beautiful second order effect of making humankind closer to a type one civilization, right? We haven't even like mastered a fraction of all the energy coming from our sun. And to me, you know, you can't even start to think about being an advanced civilization until you're at least type one. So that's one of the big second order implications of Bitcoin. This like quantum computing, like in the bouncy that that does, that's also driving us in a very interesting second order consequence, figuring out how do we master other principles of time and space. Now, the one thing that's very interesting to me is I say that energy is the one currency of the universe. And I guess this kind of piggybacks what you were saying, Steve, which is once you start thinking about quantum and stuff that we don't understand, like we still don't know like what dark matter is, right? So is it possible that, I don't know, like the second law of thermodynamics is not real? Because once you're able to like break into other universes, there's infinite energy. I don't know. I mean, that's obviously way above my pay grade, but it would take some fundamental breakthrough in the laws of physics, or like in my mind, like a rewriting of like our first, second, or third law thermodynamics to think about a system other than Bitcoin. It's not impossible, but it seems unlikely today.
Yeah. So we'd either have to see some sort of like a simulation hypothesis, get more conviction that and or a multiverse thing is real.
And even then, it doesn't necessarily break it, right? Because you might still be able to conserve energy, but instead of just within one universe, among all universes, which potentially loop back in on themselves. So even that doesn't necessarily break.
Yeah. Okay. So this is all fun, interesting headspace to explore. But if we want to ground back to reality, there's a topic that I thought would be fun to sort of weigh in on, which is this John Carvalho proposal, which is related to the actual Bitcoin that we have that actually works. But it's a pretty big change depending on how you see it. It's a pretty big kind of new style of thinking about Bitcoin. So I'll read out a little bit of the proposal here. This is so John Carvalho is a prominent Bitcoin advocate. He's recently proposed a significant change to how we define and use the term Bitcoin in the cryptocurrency ecosystem. His proposal outlined in a new Bitcoin Improvement Proposal, or BIP, suggests defining the smallest unit of Bitcoin, the Satoshi, as the standard denomination, effectively ditching the decimal places we're accustomed to when dealing with Bitcoin amounts. This move aims to streamline user comprehension, eliminate confusion around decimal usage, and align more closely with Bitcoin's protocol, which fundamentally deals with whole numbers. So this is basically saying, instead of talking about Bitcoin as 21 million, actually accept the fact that it's 21 quadrillion, I think is that the right number? Oops. 2.1 quadrillion. Okay. So instead of calling it 21 million, call it 2.1 quadrillion, which is really just what we call Satoshi level today, which my understanding is this is actually how it's written in the code, right? That there is no Bitcoin
consensus 100 million. Here. It is that unit. Yes.
Yeah. So this has been kind of making some waves in the ecosystem. Like What are your thoughts? I think, Steve, at least in the group chat, you had a bunch of like reasons why. I think you were saying, this is obvious, it's going to happen, like, duh.
I don't know if I'd frame it that way, but I've been thinking this way for over a year, and our friend and colleague Bob has as well. In fact, he baked it into his product already. His app uses this standard that John just proposed as a BIP, right? So he's an advocate for it. So we can get into like why. I wouldn't frame it as like the reason why is like, oh, let's make it 2.1 quadrillion versus 21 million. That's a disadvantage of this. Because 21 million, like if you take, you know, let's say 2 billion people have heard of Bitcoin. And then like, if you ask people, what do you know about Bitcoin? Like probably one of the highest percentage of people things that they know about is like that there's 21 million. It's fixed. There's never going to be more, right? That's like a, and that's also probably the number one attribute of Bitcoin that would get defense from every, like, all Bitcoiners would defend against having this fixed supply, which everyone knows as 21 million. Now, there's 2.1 quadrillion. It doesn't actually change that whatsoever. It's like you can think of it as like a mentally like a stock split, basically. So it doesn't change that economics or the credibility or certainty of the supply. It doesn't change any of that. But just the meme of 21 million kind of might be affected by this. So that's a drawback. Why does Bob like it? I think Bob likes it because he's creating Boardwalk Cash, which is an app that's intended to allow people to spend Bitcoin and a small amount. And anyone working on like using the Cashew protocol or Fediment or Lightning or any kind of spending application with Bitcoin, you know, people aren't daily spending, you know, one Bitcoin or more. They're spending what some people in the space call sats. And so people that work in Bitcoin probably call it sats, probably think everyone thinks and knows about sats. But my estimation is 2 billion people have heard of Bitcoin and 200,000 people have heard of sats. Like a tiny, minuscule amount of humans are aware of sats. So I'd say that the heart of this argument is that like everyone knows Bitcoin, no one knows sats. People just want to receive Bitcoin. Bitcoin's money. It's becoming money. It'll become a currency that people spend, and they just want to receive Bitcoin. Anecdotally, I've come across many people who they look at a wallet and they see sats and they're like, oh, is that a shit coin or is that a new token? Or should I invest in sats? Same with Lightning. People see a Lightning tab. And they're like, oh, should I invest in that? It's like, nah, it's a nerd technology layer that should be hidden from people. Just want to send and receive Bitcoin. So I think it makes way more sense to just call it Bitcoin. So Bob in his Boardwalk Cash app calls sats Bitcoin. So this unit of, you know, this tiny, tiny unit, 100 million of these units in what the world today calls a Bitcoin. And it just makes the user experience way better. Like you're sending 150 sats instead of 0.0000025 sats. Like no one deals with decimals like that. It's extremely difficult to like wrap your head around it, know what you're sending and receiving. It's error prone, which is why people are proponents of sats, because you get rid of all the decimal places. But then the separate argument is like, well, should we call it this new thing sats? Or should we just call it Bitcoin? And so then the counter argument is like, well, first of all, like coordination, like how are we going to coordinate everyone to switch? And then confusion. Won't it cause confusion? For one, that, you know, does it destroy the 21 million meme? And does that hurt Bitcoin? Also, just like, yeah, are people going to make a mistake? Like they thought they were buying one thing and they got rugged because it's actually, like, I actually find that a pretty weak argument. It's 100 million times different. So any situation, like if you thought you were getting one thing and it's 100 million times off, it kind of makes you pause and reflect and wonder. Like, I doubt you're going to click a button and think you just bought, you know, a million Bitcoin or something, when in fact it was just a fraction of a Bitcoin. When
I think you underestimate people's.
But then, you know, also, well, I mean, so I would suggest people check out Boardwalk Cash, look at the UI, and see for themselves. Do they think it's confusing or not? I don't. Secondly, I just mentally looked through at Cash App and a few other products, like, what if they made this change? How would I go about doing it? And I didn't actually like create the mocks. I just did it in my head, but it feels completely reasonable to change it and not create confusion. You also can imagine during a transition period, like a product like Cash App, if it were to change it, you could have a little like help tip or, you know, some kind of note, like help easing that transition and educating people of this shift as well. So they're, even though I think it's doubtful that people are going to really think they're getting 100 million more or less of whatever they thought, they still might be like, why did this change or why is it changed? And then, so if there's a little help tip, I think that's all like totally feasible. Another argument to do it, I find the argument about spending and just dealing, like awareness of the Bitcoin brand, keeping it simple that you send and receive Bitcoin, and that to prepare for a future of Bitcoin payments as a currency, that's to me the primary argument for why we should do this. A secondary argument, but other people like it even more so, I think, is around trading. And, you know, the psychology of like, Bitcoin's too expensive for me now. It's $102,000 or whatever. I don't have $102,000. I can't invest in Bitcoin. And I don't know how big the problem is today, but certainly over the last 8 years, I've come across so many people who are new to the space, and they literally think they can't buy a fractional Bitcoin, so they don't think they can buy Bitcoin. You know, maybe that problem's getting solved, but that's one psychological hurdle. Another psychological hurdle I've seen is a reason people buy altcoins is because they're cheaper. So like, XRP is like whatever it is, like 39 cents or, you know, it's in Dogecoin to some decimal point. And a lot of humans think there's more room for it to go up than Bitcoin. There's more room for it to go. Like it only has to go to $3 and I'm a millionaire. And that's really poor economic analysis and fundamental understanding. Nonetheless, a lot of humans think that way. And especially at the beginning of their journey, if Bitcoin is all of a sudden priced much less, maybe it addresses that. Again, I'm not a huge proponent of that argument, even though I acknowledge that's a psychological reality. I personally don't think like we should have this big move towards that just for that. I think it's the first reason for me is why I think it makes sense. Another aspect to this that is starting to be discussed and should be discussed is like, does this need to be some like one big moment where the world changes and a big marketing event, and like there's a bunch of coordination among major players that it all switches on this day, or is it gradual? And I've heard other people feel like it needs to be a big moment, a marketing that actually is necessary to avoid confusion.
Like we need BlackRock to come and say this is fine.
Well, like you know, you imagine Binance
going, you have our permission.
But right. I actually think gradual is more realistically how it would be done if it's going to be done, and I think it can be successful that way. And as an example, again, Border Cash and actually some other product piped up on Twitter saying, hey, we've already done it too. So there's at least two examples of products who have already done this unilateral decision. They decided to do it in their product. They feel it's the right decision for their product. Didn't require anyone else to bless it or give permission. I think spending apps will trend, or I shouldn't say that aggressively. I think there's a good chance that spending apps will trend this way. And that's sort of like who should be like sold on this idea, like use Bitcoin, not sats. And let them realize, oh, it doesn't create a confusing situation and it's actually a better way to go about it for my app. And then more and more spending apps do that. Assuming Bitcoin takes off as a currency, let's say over the next 10 years, it takes off as a currency, 99% of people that are using Bitcoin on a daily basis aren't moving, you know, $1 million a day. They're not moving one plus Bitcoin. They're moving what we call sats today. So 99% of people might be introduced to using Bitcoin on a daily basis through products like Boardwalk Cash and many more to come. And they'll all be exposed to it just being called Bitcoin, and it'll be native and natural to them. And only the old timers will be complaining about like, get all cranky about, oh, like, why are we changing?
Back in my day. Get off my lawn. Yeah. So I want to just add slightly a nuance, but I mean, you covered everything really well there. I agree with all that. I think it's all good argumentation. The one thing I personally am really a fan of, or just don't think it's realistic, is like doing it as a bit. Like, I get it. It's good that people are talking about it. I'm glad it's causing this discussion. I tend to agree. It's going to be a lot better for payments. And I think we all want to see this as a currency, not just a sort of investment goal. So 100% agree with all of that. The one thing I would say is just like the the reality of the way Bitcoin, just nature of reality works, is, you know, emergent. And so to me, the one thing that I strongly disagree with, and we're kind of hinting at this, is trying to be like, oh, there's this like top down sanction. Like, we need to, like, as a community, agree it as a BIP. Like, no, the way language forms, when language is always formed, you know, in any language, computer, natural, otherwise, is emergent, and you find shelling points for things. And so my view is, I think every actor should basically act individually on this. I don't think it should be approved as a BIP. I think that's kind of silly to me. I think that Ob is taking an incredible lead here, and like, he believes in that. And so he's putting his money where it is. And if people like that, and if, you know, someone like Cash App, for example, the company like that says, yeah, we also agree, then that'll start a natural movement. So I think doing it as a BIP is great to get a conversation started, but I think the whole point of systems like Bitcoin, systems like nature, or like language, is to let things emerge. And so I think the transition should be gradual. I think if it even happens, right? I think sort of people, the market will decide over time. You know, I will say Satoshi's sats, well, I agree with you, Steve, that it is a very small number of very nerdy people that know what sats are. It's the same way Bitcoin started off too. So I do think there's a chance that we already have enough critical mass of the nerds and the tastemakers for sats to go mainstream. I agree. I think in the abstract, if I were waving a magic wand, Bitcoin is better. But I would say every company and every individual actor, just like with a node, should make their own decision. And in 10 years' time, we'll know.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of the bottoms-up stuff. Like, that feels, that's the ethos of Bitcoin and the internet. So I'm generally a fan of that. But I think, many years ago, Steve convinced me that actually, like, being a point for information coordination across the ecosystem is a really underserved and valuable and needed thing. So I wonder, like, one, is there somebody who's, you know, outside of John who wrote the BIP, is there somebody else who may take this up as like a, you know, a kind of becoming that coordination, kind of information coordination hub, or is maybe that's something John's interested in? And then, you know, and then separately, like, if we really think that this is going to happen because of the payment apps, which, like, I kind of agree and see the logic in that, but I almost feel like that assumes that payments is kind of really here and at scale today. If we're going to sort of lead with payments, you know, payments is going to lead that change, and that'll kind of get to the rest of the ecosystem. So then does the whole ecosystem get held back from this change until payments has a great use case?
If that's how it plays out, yes. But okay, what's wrong with that? I mean, I don't see some imminent need that this has to be changed in 2025.
Yeah.
Or Bitcoin fails. So I have several comments. Yeah. Regarding sats, Max, I mean, I'd say the default path right now is that we go from, let's say, 200,000 people aware of sats to millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and it's called sats. And I don't think we failed if that happens. I don't think that's like bad.
Right.
I've called it sats. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
I actually just think calling it Bitcoin is better. So for me, it's just like Bitcoin would be better than sats. I do see a plausible way for it to pan out that way. So let's, like, I'm glad John, like, stated that publicly.
Sure. Yeah.
I'd only had private conversations previously. But yeah, I don't think it's a disaster if it's called sats. Another quick note though, I don't feel as strongly about this, but some people in Bitcoin feel very strongly like they don't like Satoshis and sats as a name. They think it's disgraceful.
Disgraceful.
Why is it disgraceful?
Because they don't think Satoshi would have wanted his name used that way.
It's too egocentric.
He never named it that way.
That sounds kind of culty to me.
Okay.
So, well, like I said, I don't feel super. That people I respect have, it actually feel pretty strongly about that. So that another factor. I'd also, as we both said, Matt, you and me, we both said, like, you know, having it be emergent and sort of bottoms up is natural and the likely path. So we agree on that. Now, part of that though is, I mean, I totally agree. Like, each individual actor can, like, make their decision, like we've already seen in products, but that also could be, there could still be a moment. Like, there's again, Coinbase, River, like, Binance, Cash App, they can partner with each other and be like, this is our day. We're going to announce this day. And that's totally fine too. It emerged bottoms up. They happen to partner with each other. It's not top down. I could see that happening. The last point I had was around the BIPs. I don't know if I disagree with you or just simply like to add more about BIP, a BIP. I think BIPs are like misunderstood as well. So for the audience that doesn't know what BIP means, Bitcoin Improvement Proposal. So it's just a proposal to improve Bitcoin. And it's just a document. Anyone can create one and publish it. it's pretty minimal requirements to be blessed and actually get like an official BIP number. Getting an official BIP number doesn't mean that like there's,
sure,
it's a great idea, that it's fully like specced out and tight and like technically good. It doesn't mean consensus. It doesn't mean anyone's going to implement it. It doesn't mean anyone has implemented it. It means none of that. Just getting a BIP number kind of just means like your grammar is correct and you filled out the format. You filled out the form correctly.
Who gives them numbers? Who takes a BIP and sort of blesses it with a number?
It's a GitHub repo. The BIPs are a GitHub repo, and there's maintainers of that repo. And historically, it's been Luke Dash Jr. And a second person was added, I don't know, a number of years ago. But the two of them, like, it was kind of becoming a bottleneck for, you know, a variety of reasons. So earlier this year, I think 3 or 4 new BIP editors were added who ensure that any submitted BIP basically meets a certain criteria. Again, not really technical assessment or anything else, but just does it follow the process?
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, then they assign it a number. But I do think people are just unaware of those basics, that just getting a BIP number doesn't mean there's centralized coordination or that it somehow is elevated status or that it's now official or that it's now going to, everyone has to do it. No, not at all. Another thing that everyone should be aware of with BIPs is that it's not just consensus changes. It can be all kinds of different changes. Like consensus changes can be BIPs. Non-consensus changes that do impact maybe like the transaction relay protocol, like the peer-to-peer protocol between nodes. It's not consensus layer, but it absolutely has interoperability effects, can be a BIP. But it also can be things like language.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like what you call it. It doesn't, you know, so it actually, I think it's an appropriate, even if you believe that it's not going to be this top-down thing, it's still appropriate to be a BIP as a communication vehicle.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
That's my only point about BIP. But I agree, like top-down, that's not really how this is going to happen or really can or should happen.
Cool. And then just on the coordination, it sounds like if it were to be that, you know, River, Coinbase, Cash App, et cetera, we're all trying to make a moment of something like this, would that, you know, would we expect to see that take a year or two from now? Like, that's not any kind of thing that would happen I assume that would just take a while. Is that, if somebody wanted to change it, would that be kind of in the year's time frame versus like months?
I mean, it's impossible to predict, but I mean, it could range greatly, right? If there was like this silent majority, like, again, I'd had private conversations with a few folks liking this idea. If somehow that was like the case with many people throughout the space, maybe things move quickly, but it's probably not the case. I suspect most people in Bitcoin haven't even thought about this much at all. And that's why a lot of the reaction was negative, because like you tend to, if you've not thought about it, a new idea, you tend to quickly gravitate to what the drawbacks would be. And so we saw that reaction. And then we'll see over time how many people spend some more mental cycles on it and actually become persuaded by the arguments to do it. And so the higher percentage of people that get convinced, the faster they get convinced, the faster we would see this happen. But this is not some urgent problem that needs to be solved.
Right.
I could easily see it never happening. I could easily see it happening over 10-year time frame, led by Bitcoin as a currency, which is a long-term.
Right. And actually, I guess I sort of touched on this. It wasn't meant to be a dig, but I kind of said, like, I think we need payments to be somewhat mainstream and growing. If we're going to rely on payment vehicles to drive that kind of adoption, we actually need those use cases to grow. And I was, my understanding right now is that it's like small, but growing and compounding. And I wonder if there's anything we could talk a little bit about, like the state of payments, or what kind of, are there any high level metrics? What's going on? Like, what can we know about payments? And then I hear a lot of people say things like, Lightning is dead. And obviously, like, you don't think Lightning is dead. And there's lots of smart people who don't think Lightning is dead. So like, what are they getting wrong?
Do you mind? I had a couple other points I wanted to make about unit thing. Do you mind if we like wrap that up first?
And then
absolutely excited about the next topic. You know, something that I could imagine making this change occur sooner is if exchanges did see it to their benefit to change the units for either of the reasons I mentioned earlier, like
for trading
reception, or they had data that showed a lot of their traders weren't buying Bitcoin, or like newcomers to their product weren't buying Bitcoin because it was too perceived to be too expensive, or maybe they do it. But now speaking that out loud, I actually think it's the opposite, because it would like give reasons not to buy altcoins and reduce trading. It basically would probably produce more stackers and people who just exclusively invest in Bitcoin, which is generally bad for their business. So
the high price of Bitcoin causes people to not buy Bitcoin, go for the other things, and that's a more profitable type of purchase, because people go in and out of it.
You're more likely to go into Bitcoin once and stay there instead of like, oh, I'm going into shitcoin 429, 420, 6969. Although what that does leave open for is all these sort of Bitcoin native exchanges, right? So, you know, I'm investing in a number of these exchanges, which are Bitcoin. So these would be things like Bitnob in Nigeria, Biba in Brazil, Yopaki in Mexico. These guys are all over the world. Osmo in Central America. For them, they do have exactly the use case you're saying. They don't offer any shitcoins. They don't want to encourage trading. They do want to encourage more normal people to buy. So to me, they seem like the natural first movers, because they have like people that certainly don't have $100,000, maybe only, you know, 1% or 0.1% of that. So maybe they'll be the ones to start the traction.
That's a great point. You should maybe follow up with them and just like, I mean, not like pitch it, but just like,
have you seen the BIP guys?
No, did you see this? And what do you think? I'd be curious to hear like what their take is. I agree that that set of folks in Bitcoin, I think, are logical adopters of this in the near term.
Yeah.
Can I see a question from the chat? What about bits? Is that...
Are we live, DK? Oh, I didn't realize there was a live chat. Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah.
How do we see it? Yeah, how do we see this live chat?
Just over on the right, do you see a little chat?
Yep.
Icon? Yeah, just tap on that. And then
wait, under studio chat?
Yeah, like this. Do you have like a menu bar along the right?
Okay,
right hand side.
A live stream chat. Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Hey, we got some listeners. What's up?
Yeah, so someone asked, "What about bits?" So first of all, thanks for the question. We actually want to encourage audience questions. So
yeah. This is exciting.
It's great to even know someone's listening. That's
awesome. Even if they're trolling us, it's totally.
But we want the show to be useful, so please, more questions, the better. So what about bits? Bits, actually, when I first started spending time on Bitcoin full time, like in 2017, I was a bits maxi. I was a proponent of bits. I think Jimmy
is bits the same as, I thought you said millibits was what you were, at least what I remember you advocating.
Well, maybe there's a flavor of that at some point. Okay. Or a phase, but bits, I think Jimmy Song proposed it like way back when. I think it was 100 or like 1 millionth of a Bitcoin, something like that. Or maybe, anyway, it's somewhere in between what sats are today and a Bitcoin is today. I think it felt pretty good then because sats were still too minuscule. But now that we're at $100,000 Bitcoin, all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, when $1 million Bitcoin? And all of a sudden, like a sat is a penny. So, yeah, I think I'm no longer a fan of. Well, I mean, the question could be interpreted two ways. One is the unit of account that's a different decimal place. I'm no longer really a fan of that. The other way,
the honey badger.
The other interpretation of it is like we should call sats bits. I do like bits better than sats. It's just a nickname of Bitcoin. And so again, like none of us control what people call this stuff. Even if there's like a trend towards what John Carvalho has in his BIP and people start calling it Bitcoin, I could absolutely imagine colloquially people just shorten Bitcoin to bit. I sent you 2000 bits. So, again, I'd see that as being emerging, like my own opinion. Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
What do we think? Jump to payment stuff?
Yeah. I don't know, Steve, did you have other... Did that wrap all your other plans?
Let's jump ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So I want to dive into this, and I want to maybe start by saying for anyone that is interested in this topic, our jam from 2 weeks ago, which I think is still live, we go into a lot of detail. But I also want to link this in a little bit with some of the Nostr stuff, which we may have time to get to today. If not, maybe in the next episode. But the criticism that I keep seeing coming up over and over and over again, and it's kind of mind-boggling. to me at some point. I don't know if it's just like willful ignorance or, you know, or if there's some kind of, you know, incentivized ignorance here, but is that Lightning is dead. And we talked about this, you know, for 30 minutes or so 2 weeks ago. And I gave the example then that, you know, a year and a half ago, I had dinner with people at Blockchain at Berkeley Club, all of whom are working on Ethereum or so. None of them even knew Lightning was around. They all asked me if it died in 2018. And so that was kind of shocking to me because these are very smart kids and building really cool apps. Similarly, we've seen a bunch of criticisms, again, some of them may be motivated to have various kinds of covenants or other scaling solutions. But again, say, like, does it work? I think, Steve, you were sharing some tweets in the chat. Amir Taki, who was a Bitcoin developer and then did a lot of other things, came back working other crypto projects. He made the point, which actually is a fair criticism, that Trump struggled to use Lightning on national television when he was in the pub key. And so, to be clear, there are still issues with Lightning, particularly on the non-custodial front, which I also thought there was a great tweet, great Noster post from Druid, I believe, Dustin Trammell, where he made the point where he was like, language does matter a lot here, kind of layering to our other conversation, calling things non-custodial. By the way, I realize I don't like using that. I'm going to stop using that. I think we should just say like wallet. Like, it should be normal that you hold your own stuff. And if you have an account with someone, that's your choice. But this idea of like, oh, like, you know, I have to move away from the norm, which is to have some control for me, I don't like. So let's just say people that hold their own wallets, Lightning is still a difficult experience. And I think a lot of that boils down to people's expectations versus reality. And people's expectation was it's going to happen quickly, as fast as we saw, you know, Ethereum and these other systems scale. We're going to be able to see Lightning non-custodially used, so everyone has their own wallet. And obviously that hasn't been the case. And I think the reality is crypto has done a very bad job of setting expectations. One, because you can see things like total volume lock, which is very different than the liquidity that's used in Lightning, which is used for payments. So therefore, you want actually less to be routed more efficiently. But two, you know, you see this expectation of we can build fast by sacrificing centralization or sacrificing decentralization rather. And the reality is you can't have everything. Protocols that are going to actually be decentralized take probably at least a decade, maybe more to evolve. That's what we're seeing in Bitcoin. That's what we're seeing in Lightning. That's what we're seeing in the early days of Noster. So just all of that is a kind of factor. But the one thing that I want to make another call for anyone listening to this, I saw Graham from Voltage says they're going to publish some kind of new report. I don't know what that means, but obviously they have some private data. River has published multiple reports on Lightning Network. Obviously they have a lot of private data. I would love to see some website, anyone listening to this right now, called lightningisdead.lol. Sorry, Lightning is not .lol. Or is, if you want to be funny. Or whatever the site is. But some site that brings in ideally at least the public metrics that we have about the Lightning Network, which Noster is one great source of that. And then if you can get private metrics and people are willing to contribute that data as well, amazing. But just to set expectations for you, I just pulled up Noster.band, right? This is an open stat site.
Do you want to screen share it or?
Can I do that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Do you see the little share icon at the bottom?
Dude, we're getting fancy now. Okay. I'm going to share my screen. This is scary.
Sorry, is you got like, your 12 words up in another browser.
Yeah, exactly. Let me just show you okay. Can you see that?
Yeah.
So this is Noster.band, just to show everyone where I got here. You go to the top. You can set it to 2 months or 6 months. They've got some overviews. This is primarily for things like Noster pub keys. You can see the total number of pub keys. What Artur, the creator of the site, calls trusted users. These are people he has strong reason to believe based on all of these stats. Things like having a Lightning address are humans, so we're up to close to 200,000 trusted users. He's got the daily active user count. We can talk about that for Noster. But the reason I wanted to bring you over is if you go towards some of his bottom stats, he has daily zaps and total zaps. And so just to give everyone just a sense of like the order of magnitude we're talking about, just today, say the 17th or yesterday, we saw 6,449 zaps, individual Lightning payments on Noster, in one day. If you go to the total number of zaps, we are currently about to cross probably today 4 million zaps ever sent. And you can obviously see the zap amounts. You can see like average zap amount here. Total zap amounts quite high. But you can see, you know, people are zapping still small amounts, you know, 211,000 Satoshis.
Those are the maxes?
Yeah, 200,000 Bitcoin. Exactly. Those are the max zapped amounts. Let's see if he has...
For those days. Yeah, I'm curious.
Total is what I want. opposite. So yeah, total Zap amounts, you know, you can see 1.6 mil. Whoops, a little bit lower. Yeah, we did. Clearly need a better stance.
That's actually a great way to sell people on Lightning. I mean, there's a million Bitcoin zapped every day.
Yeah.
Greater DeFi.
And look at this outlier day. Clearly, this is an outlier, but in one day, you know, 217 million Bitcoin got zapped wrong. Hell.
I would guess somebody's wash trading themselves or like wash zapping themselves,
actually,
right?
If I may interrupt.
Please, please.
If I may interrupt, I think on this pod, we can only call it Bitcoin now and not sats.
No.
We're
I don't know if I can commit to that.
So when we say Bitcoin, we mean Bitcoin. And when we say Bitcoin, we also mean sats.
Big Bitcoin, little Bitcoin.
Itty bitty.
We'll prove out how either. No one will know what we're talking about.
It's going to be super confusing. Yeah.
But go get back to like, is Lightning dead?
Yeah. But this is my broader point is like, again, this is one of the many reasons that I love Nostr. And for those of you who don't know, I mean, obviously I've got my Nostr shirt on here. I'm as bullish on Nostr as I am on Bitcoin. Nostr needs Bitcoin. Bitcoin needs Nostr to go fully for many reasons we can talk about. And obviously there's a lot of Lightning payments outside of Nostr. Stacker.news has a lot of this stuff, which is open source. But I'm just hitting on Nostr because this is open public data that anyone could use. And I think it would be a great service to the community for someone who's excited to do this to take some of that data. Arturo has it there, but it's not like easiest as you saw to parse and just, you know, filter in all the different sources, starting with Nostr, maybe Stacker News since it's open source, other private companies, and just show what is the GDP. I mean, the fact that we can show 500,000 Bitcoins, little B Bitcoins getting zapped in a day, that is a big deal. And I really believe, yes, I know some of these actors are potentially disingenuous, potentially hostile. There's, I believe, the majority of people that think Lightning is dead, they just don't know. And if they saw this data, they would be truly surprised.
Well, let's walk through that. I mean, who are the different segments of people saying Lightning is dead or shitting on it? Hey, one group is, I'd say, like most people in crypto, and when I say that, I mean not Bitcoin. Like crypto and Bitcoin are two completely different worlds.
Yes,
my perspective. The people in crypto, like they maybe like read the Lightning white paper 8 years ago or whatever, 7-8 years ago, and they really haven't paid attention since. And so they're just, and plus, I mean, frankly, it's taken, I mean, building out Lightning is taken forever and it's going to take many more years, right? So they don't really have the patience to like for that because this is not like important to their day-to-day life or business or career or whatever. That's one group. So, well, I'll state another group, which is people who are wanting to like do some Bitcoin season 2 layer 2 on Bitcoin that they either, you know, they're basically pitching their own thing, which is largely orthogonal to Lightning, but, you know, by shitting on Lightning and I mean, basically like that's what the Bitcoin devs have been working on for 8 years and it's failed. But the energy, the development energy is back in Bitcoin today. Bitcoin season 2 and we've got like our group is bringing the energy back, the innovation, the creativity.
What is
the multi-sig?
Like, I've never quite gotten what season 2 means when people say that. They're talking like NFTs on Bitcoin,
DeFi on Bitcoin.
But like
and
Lava is a form
on
of
Bitcoin,
DeFi,
NFTs
right?
On Bitcoin, DeFi on Bitcoin. Sorry.
But like Lava is a form of DeFi on Bitcoin, which to me seems like a useful innovation, right?
That's, so that's like a sensible approach to it. So it doesn't qualify
as a season 2.
I would lava in its own bucket. I mean, so from sort of the investor standpoint, I will say I stopped taking all meetings with anyone that said they're part of season 2 or L2s, unless it came and I was able to like verify quickly myself that there was the ability for unilateral exit from the system. Like, let's just take a step back and just discuss for a minute. What does layer 2 mean and what can it accomplish? Layer 2, in my mind, if you want an actual decentralized layer 2, you have to be able to unilaterally exit the system, full stop. There is no ifs, ands, or ups about it. If you have, and to be clear, there's a spectrum of security trade-offs you may have with your ways you custody and use your Bitcoin. You may say, oh, I, you know, am okay using someone like a public company like Cash App because honestly, I have more trust in them than I do in myself, and that's totally fine. Doesn't mean it's a decentralized layer 2. With a multi-sig, some multi-sigs may have more or better trade-offs than others. Doesn't mean it's decentralized. In the Lightning Network, you know, assuming you had the ability to pay to write to the chain any moment, you could always unilaterally exit, full stop. And that, to me, is the only thing that is decentralized. Well, most of these L2s are, I looked at just like a few of these and I just stopped taking all meetings, especially if it came from anyone in crypto. It's just like, life is short. I don't have time for this. And it's multisigs. It's literally just multisigs being sold as some kind of layer two. And again, that's fine. I have no problem with multisigs so long as they're acknowledged for the trade-offs that they have. Liquid is a multisig. In theory, it's better than a lot of other multisigs because the federation is large enough and trusted actors and blah, blah, blah. But it's not a layer two in my mind.
You mean by that? Then maybe elaborate on what you mean by multisig in this context?
Yeah, well, in this context, it just means if you're using, for example, you know, a Liquid token, then I forget exactly, you probably know more on the exact federation, but there's some number of signers. You need M of N signers to be able to withdraw that Liquid token into the Bitcoin itself.
11 to 15,
right? And again, that's okay, but it's not a decentralized layer two. A decentralized layer two means if I'm the one running the Lightning node, I'm using, you know, the Satoshis in my channel, the Bitcoin, the mini Bitcoin in my channel, and I decide to close that channel without anyone else's permission, I can't. That's the difference. And so to me, season two is akin to Liquid, which is fine. Anyone can build on Bitcoin what they want. Those are scaling solutions for sure, but they're not decentralized layer twos. And so I just think, yeah, it's very important to differentiate those things. I would look at something like Lava as something that is decentralized. Like in theory, at least to the best of my understanding, I'm less of an expert on discrete law contracts, but if I, you know, publish to a discrete law contract and I follow the terms and conditions of that contract, no one can rug. That's the difference. In a Liquid federation and these other federations, if the actors collude, they can rug. That's the difference.
Yep. I agree with that. With that distinction. Getting back to the original question though about the Lightning GDP volume data impress people or influence people's view of it. If you take these two groups, so the two groups I started with, and there's other Lightning is Dead segments, but the first two, one are crypto people and two, Bitcoin season two people. I think both of those camps look at the volume and laugh. Like the Zap data and Nostr data you just shared, they'd laugh. It's a tiny amount in compared to almost anything, you know, be it Visa or what's happened on Ethereum or DeFi or like the value locked up in DeFi contracts. It's minuscule to that. So they would just dismiss it. My response to that is it's really comparing apples to oranges. It's just not even like a remotely interesting comparison. But you also have to acknowledge that it is tiny. It's tiny volume. But I think you have to look at both. What's the actual underlying use case? Is it sustainable? Versus I'd say a lot of the like degen activity that produces big numbers for the gambling casino, that's not sustainable. And well, or, you know, gambling is sustainable. I mean, gambling has existed forever. So I think gambling is sustainable, but any particular specific type of gambling in the gambling casino is like is a fad and it goes away and then the next one's created. But people using Bitcoin as payments for real, true, legitimate commerce, and that might rile some people up saying that gambling casino is legitimate commerce, which I think it's legitimate commerce, but like sustainable commerce that isn't going to be a fad. That will take a long time to organically grow. So it's just natural that it starts off at really low volumes, minuscule to tiny to small to medium to large, and then Visa scale. And that's the potential for Bitcoin payments to follow that path. And I think the last 3 to 4 years, we've gone from minuscule to tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are strong growth rates to go from minuscule to tiny, but we're still tiny. And now let's keep making it better user experience, better scaling, better everything, better use cases, more use cases, and let's grow to small and then celebrate that and then grow to medium and celebrate that. And comparing to the other stuff is like completely meaningless.
I want to make two points on that. And then I see Jesse actually has some good questions and comments in the chat, which are worth addressing. But before we do that, I want to build on what you're saying, which is the group that I personally am most interested seeing, at least convinced that there is activity happening on Lightning, even if it is small relative to what we know one day it can be, is the group of builders who want to build applications on the web where they're using Bitcoin for payments or coordination that was not possible before, full stop. People like Kia. And the thing, and I know we're not going to have enough time to go deep on this today, but I really want to hit this heavy in a future episode. Is, you know, I've been following this guy recently, Oster, Tim Bama, or Buma, and he's just been killing it with awesome takes. And, you know, he makes this point that I can't stop thinking about, which is that the real value of Nostra is the ability to have a socioeconomic landscape laid over the web or the internet, full stop. And the more you start to like think about that and let it marinate, the technicals of what he's saying is that anything in Nostra, any NPUB, note, any public key, event, anything, anything that happens in Nostra, and this sounds like kind of abstract, any message that I publish, zap that I send, all these things are events. Any of those events can be mapped to a payment, either directly with Lightning or with Cashew, which is, that's a whole nother episode, but eCash, which itself can be converted to Lightning because the mints are all connected via the Lightning network in the back. The key that I'm trying to get at and what I want to see happen is, you know, the groups that want to focus on crypto and DeFi, they're probably not even the people we need to be convincing. I'm more interested in how do we get sincere people from places like Hacker News that would love to see a machine payable web, a web where you can integrate micropayments into any action take, and the incredible Cambrian explosion of new apps that's going to create. As an investor, that's what I'm excited about. When do we see, you know, the kids applying to YC that don't want to do the crypto crap, they're not interested in gambling or trying to scam people or degen or whatever, but they say, yo, we now have a socioeconomic layer that we can build over the internet. And it's possible. And yes, we see it small because everything starts small. You know, in the early days of TCP/IP, it was a joke between a few universities. That's where we're at with Lightning Network and Nostra. So that's the group that, like, some of these stats I would love to see convinced. Second point I want to make on that, just on the data, is to be clear, the data that I'm showing for Nostra is small. And Jesse actually makes a great point that you can't verify that his app was actually attached with the payment. I think that's a true and fair point from Jesse, and it's something we should touch more on. But that's like one small fraction of the total value. And it's merely, in my mind, to demonstrate to builders, sincere builders that want to build new things, that it's possible. That's step one, is to show them it's possible. But the volume itself is actually much larger than that. I think we mentioned before, you know, Lightspark and some of these other companies like Cash App, you know, I've heard credible estimates well over $1 billion a year in Lightning volume. So it's not like a total joke either. Like, we've grown quite a lot. And I expect that to 10 or 100x, or, I mean, what was the river number? 1,000x in 2 years? Like, it'll probably happen like that again.
Growth over 2 years. That was exactly. August 2023. I know of data points from other major providers since then that growth is sustained. So it's, like I said, it's grown from what I would call minuscule to tiny. And if it, I think it's completely realistic, it'll continue to grow at that pace the next few years and be a volume that people could credibly call small.
Real. Yeah.
But again, where I'm calling large, or maybe the next step after large would be Visa. So, I mean, that's domination. I mean,
totally agree. And we're many years away from that. But I guess my question to you, to Jesse, to anyone listening to this is, how do we get that data on the website? Like, I want to see a simple website that literally just shows, hey, this is our best guess based on the public and private data sources we're funneling in, just rough order of magnitude of how much payment volume there is today. That to me is the key.
And I wanted to get to this point you were making about, like, you want the kid who's building the thing on Hacker News who doesn't really care about crypto. You know, actually, there's a guy I know who just the other day, he's not building something in crypto or Bitcoin or anything. He's just building like a useful tool on the web. And he said, oh, I want to add crypto payments. And he's like, how do I do that? And I feel like I should be equipped with an answer, a URL, a website to link him to. But I'm not even sure what Nostra Wallet Connect.
That's where I'm pointing developers to at this point. I think it's the best starting.
Let me, I'm an advocate for NWC, but I believe only Albee supports it. So like one wallet supports it. So that.
Well, there's others. There's Albee, there's CoinOS.
For David's content, right?
It's starting to grow a lot more. And yes, Albee's the major one, but there's CoinOS. There's a couple others that have integrated recently. It's starting to. Yes, we have ways to go. Cashew and all those wallets are starting to integrate as well. Yep. So.
It's like, I agree, David, like there needs to be the Stripe for payments, and that doesn't really exist today. You know, my own team works on Bitcoin development kit, Lightning development kit, which are like quite successful so far and really good development kits, but they're still, they make it way easier to program Bitcoin, but they're still lower level toolkits compared to a very simple Stripe-like API for the web. But there are others that are taking BDK, LDK, and other lower level stuff, building higher level SDKs and APIs, and like Lightspark's done this, River has done this, and others have done that. So I think we're going to just continue to see that evolve. Much every year, the developer user experience will improve, and we're not there yet, though, to have a great answer to your question. But I do think we're going to get there over the coming.
Steve,
so NWC.dev, would you agree that's the best starting point right now? Like, I should literally just like text him a link to that. To NWC.dev, is that probably the best starting point for somebody building a web app that wants to integrate payment?
Well, I'm not even sure. I would say it's the only place. I mean, Steve is right. Things like Lightspark and River definitely have, like, I think if you want to interact with the traditional fiat web system, I think NWC.dev is like the simplest way for like a hacker to get started if you don't want to deal with all the KYC and stuff. But yeah, I mean, if you're using Stripe, then you know, you would need KYC, probably Lightspark River as well. But I guess the question I have on that is, why haven't those like taken? I'm an investor in both of these companies. I would love for that to be the case. Like, why do you think?
I think they have like a good starting point of customer bases. I think it just didn't take time. I mean, like, obviously Lightspark landing Coinbase is big, and Zappo and a bunch of other banks in Latin America. You know, I don't know their pipeline. I don't, 2025, it wouldn't surprise me if they announce like many more integrations. But for
the hackers, I guess the point I want to get at is like, right, what I've seen with River and Lightspark as well is they've killed it at like behind the scenes, big BD, amazing. The reason I posited NWC.dev to you, David, is if I'm like a kid and I'm 19 and I'm jumping out of the University of Waterloo to move to San Francisco, like I don't know what that kid would start with. And maybe Lightspark is good enough now. I don't know.
No, I think you're right. I mean, NWC is simpler. It's also, I mean, it's certainly related, but it's kind of orthogonal to, I mean, it's going to ride atop other stuff. And one reason I think even Lightspark and River have made it simpler to use, but, you're still dealing with like complexities of Lightning.
Right.
I mean, one reason, so we didn't, you know, we're going to have to talk about Lightning is red on another show because there's so much to talk
there's
about.
There's too much.
We talk about
there's
it every week.
I know, every week. And we haven't even touched on mining. Let
another segment of people hating on Lightning are genuine, legitimate developers who tried to build a Lightning application. And they have put a lot of sweat equity into it. Very genuine attempt at doing it and failed. I'd say failed first and foremost because there's just not enough user demand yet. But also, because they couldn't create the user experience that they were. And there's a number of protocol and Lightning implementation developments that are underway that will improve that. So some of the problems will be fixed by progress that is happening right now. Some of it is kind of a fundamental limitation of Lightning. So, and that's why we see Cashew and Fediment and Arc and Spark.
Mm-hmm.
And Spark is something that Lightspark created. So all these other projects that all integrate with Lightning and are complementary to Lightning, but they are, well, let's say, call it like last mile solutions that help address some of the drawbacks to Lightning. So we're seeing that in development too. So it's just simply, I mean, the simple answer is it's not ready yet. It's still in development.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Work takes a long time.
I want to add two quick comments on that. And then I want to address one thing from Jesse before we leave on this. The two quick comments are, one on NWC. One of the reasons I'm very bullish is not just the bottoms up bolt. I agree we need a lot more in NWC integration, but Lightspark is also integrated with NWC. And that was part of their announcement with their UMA authentication. So that is really huge to me to see a major player that is doing an incredible job with the enterprise. So another reason I think NWC is the way to go. The second thing though is, increasingly I'm of the mindset, maybe the easiest way to get started, like this can be its own show, but there's many reasons that Lightning payments are still, and even if you have NWC or even if you have River, Lightspark doing custodially for you, for one, who the fuck knows what a Satoshi is or a Bitcoin is? Like, people aren't used to that. Then you have to deal with the, you know, all the challenge management, all this other stuff. I'm also very open to the idea. I know, you know, you mentioned our colleague Bob has been pushing for a long time, and maybe cash is what pops up, and maybe it's dollars denominated e-cash that use Lightning in the background. And once again, this kind of would defy a little bit of our expectations as a community, the Lightning is the settlement. People use cash for their day-to-day spending. And maybe that's the way it goes. And maybe for the kid from Waterloo, integrating cash is just infinitely easier. And by the way, you're going to get NWC as part of it. So one day you could have Lightning too.
Yep. I think explaining those trade-offs, or at least having some place that people can go and evaluate the trade-offs when they want to hack on a project, or there's an obvious one or two kind of solutions, would probably go a long way towards getting more people kind of playing with that. I know we're over time, so we got to wrap. I'm going to leave you with, there's kind of a elephant in the room that I would say we didn't touch on in this whole payments thing, which is like stablecoins. And to me, it feels like stablecoins may be a thing that, you know, it certainly has a bunch of different properties from Lightning, but it is a payment-like thing that people kind of have, I think, a less sophisticated, kind of more normal type user has an understanding of what it is and kind of how it works, and they don't have to learn about Bitcoin and non-custodial and liquidity and stuff like that. And so I wonder, and this is sort of more a question I'll leave us to ponder, maybe we can address later, but I wonder if stablecoins may actually be an entry point or a gateway to accelerate eventual faster Lightning adoption, or if stablecoins are ultimately a competitor to Lightning adoption and somehow sort of limit the growth because they otherwise serve the use case.
Great topic. Let's definitely queue it up for the future. I mean, I'm sure we'll cover multiple episodes in the future. Maybe before we part, give a shout out to Jesse. He had
Jesse.
He made a point about scalability and something Lightning can do. Do you want to cover that, David?
Yeah, sure. So Lightning GDP is a fascinating idea and could be incredibly compelling. This is from Jesse in the chat. But willingness to share data is very low. So that was one comment. And I think maybe this other one. So a different tact would be to paint the picture of Lightning's capabilities in terms of payments, scalability, which even Visa or Tether on Tron wouldn't be capable of competing with. Lightning can do one payment per TikTok, no problem. Is that the one you're talking about, Steve?
Yeah. He had a couple of good things
there. Him shout out that he had a good point there to talk about in terms of scaling. We didn't.
Yep.
I do have one quick comment on Jesse, or two quick comments to Jesse. Thank you for participating in the live chat, by the way. For those of you who don't know, Jesse's one of the co-founders of Amboss, but they do a lot of Lightning Network. So he's definitely an expert. One thing I think he's hitting on here that's super important in our own communication with people about the Lightning Networks, it comes down, because I've had this conversation so many times around Bitcoin, around the Lightning Network, and now around Noster as well as Lightning. You're so bullish on all this stuff. You're all in on this. And yet, you know, in the case of Bitcoin, fine. It took 15 years. In the case of Lightning and Noster, it's so early. The numbers are low. Why are you so bullish? This seems crazy. And I think the point that Jesse's getting at here is it all comes down to principles and architecture. If you only look at data without context and you say, oh, Solana has way more volume, surely Solana is going to be the winner. But it doesn't give the context that Bitcoin and Noster and Lightning were all architected with the same principles of decentralization, which means creation of your own keys and unilateral exit cases. And so in all three cases. And so in that sense, the reason I'm so bullish on all three of these protocols and working complementary together is they're based on the same sense of self-sovereign principles. And it's those principles. And if you don't have those principles, then data is vapid and meaningless because it will evaporate in all the same way that all the other centralized systems have over time, over history. Similarly with the Lightning Network, there is no other payment network in existence today that can move payments back and forth at the speed of light. Blockchains all require updating one common sense of state. It requires, you know, working with the laws of physics, which means sending information to, even if it's 10 different nodes, like I'm sure Solana is at this point, that still has a cost in terms of physics. Lightning Network is peer-to-peer. You don't have that cost. Mic drop.
All right. Well, with that, let's call it a wrap, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.